So welcome everybody to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod that gives real football fans a real voice.
No player has won more penalties this season than Jamie Vardy. He's the English Suarez, but he doesn't get criticised for it, for his play, for his diving, simply because he's English.
You're already fleecing fans as it is. So, like you say, there's no real credit to be taken from turning around and saying, well, actually, we won't take liberties to that extreme.
Remember once upon a time, you never saw no Man City shirts in London. What's a Man City shirt doing in London? Now you see Man City shirts all the time.
All the guests on this podcast, I don't allow them to sit on any fences, no umming and ahhing. We give it to you straight. That's how we do on the FFP. My name is Jordan. I'm your host and I'm joined this week by a couple of football fans, our regular Tottenham fan, Ollie, and our Arsenal supporter, Simeon. How are we doing, gentlemen?
All good, Jordan.
Good. Simeon, well?
Yeah, I'm okay. I was at the Emirates on the weekend, so certainly a good 3 points.
Good 3 points. We'll take it. All right. We'll get on to the Emirates talk in just a little bit. Don't forget to subscribe to the Football Fans Podcast via iTunes. Subscribe and share that to all your friends and pals, and follow us on Twitter, FFP_11. And any comments and questions, get those in. Right, let's kick off with some quick drive-bys. I'm going to start with you, Ollie. You mentioned a few weeks ago about Roberto Martinez and how a lot of his interviews and post-match presses kind of annoyed you because he kind of has the same old kind of lingo and same old spiel after every single game. I'll ask the same question about Steve McClaren. Do you think, is his positivity the most annoying thing in the world? After it's win, lose or draw, he's got a smile on his face, he's got something good to say. Do you find that really, really annoying? Do you think the Newcastle fans, more importantly, think that's quite annoying as well?
With all the things that are going on at Newcastle, I'm sure that you can find things that are more annoying than that. But yeah, it is slightly odd that he comes out after a defeat and he's got this kind of smile on his face, this kind of grin. I never quite understand it. He's sort of at least he's vaguely honest, which is more than you get from a lot of managers, and I appreciate that from him, that he doesn't try and soft soap it, or he doesn't to me anyway. But yeah, I would find that rather annoying if my manager was coming out all the time with a grin on his face and kind of admitting, well, you know, saying the same things again of, oh, well, we're just not good enough and we've got to get better. I mean, that's what his job is, to make Newcastle better, and they aren't getting any better. They look worse.
Yeah, they do indeed. Simeon, thinking England now, the selection for the Euros, Wilfried Zaha, does he have a strong chance now of making that European Championship squad? Bearing in mind, the competition is probably Aaron Lennon, Raheem Sterling, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Andros Townsend.
No, I don't expect him
to. His form hasn't for you warranted?
No.
Not at all,
no. I mean, he's a talented player. He has a lot of skill. Nobody can take that away from him. I think Crystal Palace are a side that just needs a very efficient and consistent forward, and I think that they could be a force. But I think he fails to flatter sometimes. I think, although he does have the trickery, I think that his output is actually quite weak for a player who does play as often as he does. I don't think he gets as many as assists and goals as he should get. And actually, if you look at his competition, even if you compare it to Chamberlain or Walcott, who haven't had great seasons in themselves, and then to Raheem Sterling, and then to the fact that, you know, you've still got the boys over at Liverpool, and actually the players who actually can play out wide, who are maybe more forwards like Welbeck, I struggle to see how Zaha will make it to the squad.
Interesting, because I agree with you until the last maybe 3 or 4 months that his output is poor, and I think it's actually improved. I think his delivery has definitely improved. I think it goes back to your point about them not having a striker, a good enough striker to put away a lot of the good balls that he's been putting in the last 3 or 4 months. I'm just thinking, if the competition is, the only person on that list I've just named out that's arguably ahead of him is Raheem Sterling. So I'm thinking, if not Zaha, who should really, as wide
men?
No,
but I think going into a tournament, Roy Hodgson is likely to want to go and play with players who have played at the highest level, which he hasn't done. And so even though Walcott hasn't had the greatest of seasons, he's still done enough. And he's done enough in the past. And actually, he probably has he may have as many goals as Zaha does anyway, despite missing so much of the season. So I think Walcott would be ahead of him.
I didn't put him in that list because Walcott is played as a forward a lot as well.
But even about Walcott in the England squad will probably be played out wide. Mm. And so will Chamberlain, who I think is also ahead of him. And Townsend, who had done well for England, who Roy Hodgson does like, will now probably play regularly for Newcastle. Mm. And although Newcastle did get stuffed by Chelsea in the weekend, Townsend did score a nice solo goal, and I expect him to peak. And then you've got the boys at Spurs, who are doing very, very well. And although they are not wide players, they will occupy the positions for midfield anyway. Mm. So I don't expect Zaha to make it at all.
Okay, all right. And a final one for both of you, this one is, start with you, Ollie. A punch in the belly, a boot to the head, or a toe pun to the ankle. Which of these three would have been your response to what Messi did to your teammate if he did what he did to Celta Vigo with the penalty?
Sorry, a punch in the head.
So here we go. Punch in the belly, boot in the head, or a toe punt to the ankle. What would have been your response if he did to you what he did to them? Basically, what I'm asking is, did you find it disrespectful?
I can't really understand what all the talk has been about this, really. Not really, no. I thought it's different, isn't it? And at least he got it right, unlike Pires and Henri. But, I didn't really see it was disrespectful. I mean, yeah, Suarez could have taken the penalty himself, I suppose, but they tried a thing and it worked. Good luck to him.
Simeon, do you feel like there's a line of professionalism in amongst your fellow, once you've won the game 4-5, 6-0, there's a line that, okay, we've battered you. Did they cross that line?
No.
They humiliated them?
No.
Or is it fair game? If it's in the rules, it's a fair game.
Football there to be enjoyed. People are in the stadium. They want to see the best players do the best things and make moments and make magic. These guys are the new Disney. These guys are making magic. Let the guys play. Let the guys do their thing. I'm all for freedom of expression, and I'm glad that they tried to recreate a moment that Pires and Henri didn't quite execute.
Would it have made a difference if they'd have missed? If Suarez had missed it?
Well, it'd be embarrassing, wouldn't it? But, you know...
It's a risky take,
listen,
I suppose.
Listen, if you lose the 6-0, you lose the 6-0. It doesn't really matter if they just, you know, if they rub it in a little bit more. You're still, you know, it's still the same result, isn't it? You know, 5-0, 6-0... It's embarrassing, you know. So, as far as I'm concerned, you know, as Simeon says, they're there to entertain people, and that's what they're doing. Fair play to them.
Okay. All right, let's kick off then with Super Sunday gone. Start with you on this one, Ollie. Whose result was better, Arsenal's or Tottenham's?
You're asking a Spurs fan. I'm going to say Spurs, of course.
Back it up.
Because Spurs have had to go away from home. I know Leicester went there before and beat Manchester City, and without taking anything away from Leicester, I actually think Manchester City totally underestimated and disrespected Leicester in the way that they played. I think that they actually thought that they were going to roll Leicester over, because the performance they put in against Leicester was absolutely pathetic, whereas I thought this was a lot more competent performance from them on Sunday. But having said that, I still feel that they didn't really wake up until the second half after that dodgy penalty decision, and then they finally, we saw the real Man City. But then in doing that, they got done by the sucker punch, because they then went streaming forward and Toure got caught on the ball, and then Spurs hit them on the counter. So in effect, they kind of played in Spurs' hands, really, which is interesting to see, because Spurs showed that they could play either way, really. If Man City were sitting off Spurs, which they were in the first half, or if Man City come at them, they were able to take the ball from them. So I definitely think that that was the better performance, because Spurs are away from home. It's the kind of game Spurs are not expected to win, because there's always question marks from the likes of yourself that Tottenham are bottlers.
Yep.
But they went there and they done it. Whereas Arsenal's performance against Leicester, they needed to win. They were at home. They had fantastic support there. And they got the result in the end. I'm not saying it's a bad result, but at the same time, Arsenal would be expected to win a home game against Leicester, no matter, irrespective of the fact that Leicester are top. You still expect Arsenal to win that game.
Okay, Simeon, let's start with the Arsenal-Leicester game out of the two first games, first of all. First of all, was it a penalty? Was it a red card? And was it the right result? So we start with the penalty. Was it the Jamie Vardy?
At the time, I didn't think it was a penalty.
You were there on Sunday, right?
I was at the game. Yeah. I didn't think it was a penalty. No player has won more penalties this season than Jamie Vardy. He's the English Suarez, but he doesn't get criticised for it, for his play, for his diving, simply because he's English. I do believe it was a red card. I do believe that there was persistent fouling from Leicester players, not just Simpson, and I think they were let off the hook. Although I do believe that the referee, who was very lenient in the first half, and he allowed the game to play, but whilst allowing the game to play, actually allowed Leicester to make fouls persistently without bookings. I think that when he gave the penalty, I do believe he saw the video, based on no evidence whatsoever, I do believe he saw the evidence and he played a completely different game in the second half. So his behaviour in the first half was parallels apart from his conduct in the second half. And so something at halftime changed his persuasion. The right result, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
over the Arsenal, 90 minutes, I mean, was Arsenal this way. Right victors.
For almost half the game, Leicester played, or certainly for a third of the game, almost a third of the game, they played with 10 men. And up to that point, they had the better chances. And certainly in the first half, there was an outstanding save from Vardy by Cech. There was another save from Kante, which was curling into the top corner. And they looked very threatening on the break, which is how they played all season, in fairness. I feel that Arsenal really struggled to break them down. I also think Arsenal actually lacked a lot of quality. Even the players who you would expect to show consistent quality, like players like Sanchez, just didn't quite have that composure that was needed to unlock the door. And I was really disappointed in that inability to really find that touch of class, because I do think there was purpose. Certainly, we dominated with possession, but you know, we always do possession even when we lose. So I felt that coming away, even though we scored in the last minute, I felt as if we didn't look like a side who could win a championship. Now, obviously, the caveat to that is that, well, if you can grind out a win, then that is the sign or the hallmark of a championship-winning side. And I would say fair enough. But certainly based on the fact that we were playing a side with 10 men and really did struggle, to emphatically to beat them for so long, I feel like that was very disappointing. I also questioned some of Wenger's decisions. As soon as they went down to 11 to 10 men, I said, bring on Walcott, bring on Welbeck straight away. Ozil's got an outstanding delivery. He can go, he doesn't provide you the momentum that you need, but he does have a brilliant delivery, which is why he gets so many assists. Bring them on, put the ball in the box. Welbeck will provide an aerial threat. They're very strong defensively, Leicester, but Welbeck has got a lot of power that adds to the mix. And then Wenger failed to bring him on to the last minute. Now, of course, you could say, well, he did bring him in, he did score. But I almost feel that he almost left it too late. Mm. But, you know, I mean,
83rd minute, wasn't it?
I mean, I do feel that a lot of players, that we do have talent in that side, but there's nobody right now who's playing well enough to drag the team to the title. Now, it may be that there are 12 games to go, that's a lot, that Sanchez can find some form and he can be that player. It may be that Walker can find some form and he can be that player. But right now, we just have too many erratic ballers. We have Chamberlain, we have Ramsey, and we have Walcott, who on their day are very talented British players, but generally they're quite inconsistent and they can be very erratic. And certainly Walcott should score more goals and hasn't. And certainly Chamberlain should do far more at this stage. Because, you know, you look at Dele Alli now, I mean, Dele Alli is almost the player that Chamberlain should be.
Yeah.
And I mean, a part of that, I do believe, is down to Wenger. The fact that he's got these three players and yet they don't play in one concrete position. Ramsey, Walcott and Chamberlain always get stunted out wide. But yet, Wenger tells you that those players, none of them are wingers. He says Walcott is a forward. He tells you Chamberlain is a centre midfielder. He tells you that Ramsey is a centre midfielder. Yet these players are so versatile that they haven't really been able to develop into the position that they need to play. Which is no wonder why they become so erratic. And then you have players who come after them suddenly surpassing them. And I think this is why we almost at times seem to just lack almost quality, despite having arguably strength in depth.
Okay, that's interesting. Ollie, on Leicester, what do you think the repercussions will be for them, bearing in mind they not only lost to a title rival, but the way they lost? So to lose the game in that way is obviously quite heartbreaking. Do you feel that they got the mental strength to bounce back from that type of loss? Or do you feel that this will have a psychological impact that they might not be able to really recover from?
I don't think that defeat in and of itself will stop them, you know, from
the way they lost,
picking
more
up again. Yeah, it's difficult, but you've still got to look at the whole picture. And the whole picture says that Leicester have lost three games all season. And, you know, that's an incredible achievement, really. You know, we're coming to the end of February, or the next round of games will be at the end of February anyway. So I think that, you know, they've got enough time to dust themselves down. They're, by all sounds, you know, it sounds like they're going to go off to, you know, to sun themselves, get some sun on their backs, and, you know, see it for what it is. The fact is that they came into February with a really tough round of games against Manchester City, against Arsenal, against Liverpool. They've lost one of them, you know, so actually they must be able to look at that and think, well, we're not doing too badly here. They're 2 points off, you know, 2 points in the lead. But I do think that a lot of people keep thinking that it's a given that Leicester are just going to go on another run and they're going to beat all these teams that they've got to play. It doesn't work like that. No. And I don't think that it's as easy to say, oh, well, they've played all their tough games now, so now they're going to win the league. It doesn't work like that. Mm. I don't think it works like that. If we've learned anything this year about this league, it's that we don't know what's going to happen from 1 week to the next. Mm. Would you have thought that Sunderland were going to beat Man United at the weekend? I know Man United have been inconsistent and poor at times, but up until last week, we were all being told that Man United were on the rise again. Mm. And they were picking up. And then they go to Sunderland and get beat, and beaten well.
Yeah.
So there's no givens here. There's no givens that they're going to now go on a run and they're going to beat this team and that team. But I'm not saying that it's because of the Arsenal defeat, but I just think 5 points is different from 2 points. Mm. And suddenly every game now is a pressure game for them, because they know one slip up and they're going to be, you know, they're going to be taken off top place if the other teams win.
Yeah.
You know, so I think there's a pressure there. I don't think, as I say, the Arsenal thing, maybe not, but the fact that it's only 2 points, that might play on their minds now, and they might start making some mistakes, you know?
And you just mentioned there the fact they've got a week, where they've got 2 weeks now before their next game, and a week they're going away somewhere hot abroad. People have been saying that Leicester are, one of the reasons why Leicester are favourites are because, unlike their title rivals, they have a week now between each game. They've got no cups and they're not in Europe, and that will benefit them. What I thought about it, and I thought, well, that's possibly true, but then if you flip it, the fact they've lost that game on Sunday in the way they lost it, psychologically, that's a long time to think about that and to dwell on that. And I've never been a believer in this thing of, you know, teams that have a week's rest are better prepared because they've got... I think at this point in the season, surely you want momentum. Mm. You want to be playing every three. If you don't want to be twiddling your thumbs every 7 days, you want to be playing. Do you feel that the fact they've got a week now between every game could be a negative?
I think it can work against you, because, you know, there's so much talk as well. I'm hearing so many people saying to me, oh yeah, well, Spurs, you've got to get out of the Europa League as soon as possible. Why? It's like, this is just like, this is typical loser talk that we hear in England. It's like, it's this real loser talk of, oh well, you know, the more competition, the less chance you've got of winning the league. Why don't you flip that and look at it the other way and think, well, actually, the more competitions you're in,
you can build form that way.
You can build form and momentum, and players are all feel like they're part of it. You know, you've got all these players at Spurs, for instance, and sorry to talk about Spurs when we talk about Leicester.
We'll come back.
But, you know, the fact is that, you know, you've got all these players in a squad, right? They all need games. They all need to feel like they're part of the team. So the more competitions you're in, the more opportunities you've got to give these players games. And say they need to come in for an important league game, you don't want them coming in cold, do you? You want them coming in thinking, right, well, you know, I'm going to have to play this guy this week, but that's no problem. He's been playing regularly for me in Europe. He's been playing for me in the Cup. I can bring him in and he'll do a job. Whereas your man Vasilevsky, who came on the other day in a pressure game at Arsenal, he's made the most monumental error you'll ever see. And probably the error that's cost Leicester the league. Because I actually think, you know, I think Simpson was stupid. I thought the first yellow card was harsh. because I don't see how he could have got out of the way of Sanchez when Sanchez pushed the ball out past him. But the second one was just stupid, and that was a yellow card. But Vasilevskiy, I just can't understand what he was doing. He's just, you know, and that mistake has cost Leicester. Now, he's only played in cup games. Now, everyone keeps telling me, oh, well, Leicester, they've only got these games to play. But Vasilevskiy's played, I've seen him play twice against Spurs in the cup games. Other than that, when's he getting a game? He's not getting a game.
So he's cold. Like
so said, he's cold. He's come into the Arsenal game in a pressure situation. He's made a monumental error. Mm. Whereas, you know, I would like to think that other players who come into a squad, they've got an opportunity to play regularly, or they're playing league games, playing Europa games or whatever it might be, and FA Cup. I think they've all got an opportunity to come in and slot straight into the team. Mm. And I think that's a massive difference. So I'm not buying all this stuff about Leicester and, oh, well, you know, they've only got a certain amount of games. You know, they said that about Liverpool as well. It didn't help them win the title, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't at all. Okay, let's go on to another City-Spurs game. Simeon, two defeats in a week to their title rivals, both at home. Are City done?
No. I mean, there's a third of the season to go. You know, a third. That's a huge amount of games. That's 36 points, 12 games. I mean, if you look at the history of the Premier League, it's always been defined by players who have driven their team onto the title. I mean, you know, you go back to Blackburn and Shearer and Sutton. You think Ronaldo at United. You think Hazard at Chelsea. Henry at Arsenal. You know, they've been players who've driven their team on.
Lundberg even.
You know, there have been plenty of players.
He was key, yeah.
He was key that season.
You know, Ljungberg, Perez. I mean, teams that win the title, they're defining players. You know, Aguero and Torre. City are players who can do it and have done it, and they're players who are still at their peak. You know, Aguero can find a run of form. Company's coming back. So the idea that a team who are, was it, 6 points behind Leicester? 6 points.
About that, yeah.
6 points, but they had 36 games or 36 points to play for are done. I find laughable. But, you know, you do have to look at the current state of play, and with them being disrupted, certainly with the announcement that Guardiola...
Has that had an impact for you, do you feel?
I mean, City have been inconsistent from the beginning of the season anyway, to be honest with you. So I think the bigger impact has been the fact that Kompany has been absent for so long, and Aguero has had key injuries. And I think that has really been their downfall. Also, perhaps at times, naive play by the manager, the way that he set up against certain teams has almost enabled them to lose. Even the way they played against Leicester, and the fact that you've got pacey players in Mahrez and Vardy, and you play a high line, and you don't press hard, and effectively, you know, you get humbled.
All right.
So I feel that that's been a bigger issue, but Guardiola has obviously caused some disruption. We know that Touré's agent in the past has made negative comments about what that would do for him, and he's a key force in the dressing room. But that's speculation. I feel that you can't rule out City. I certainly would have more faith in City putting together a consistent run with the players they have than Arsenal.
Was it a penalty for you?
Was it a penalty? I'm not sure. I don't think so.
If you were the ref, would you have given it?
Probably not, no.
Okay. Ollie?
That wasn't a penalty, no. Sterling?
Yeah.
No. No.
Oh, we're talking about... Yeah, Sterling. Oh, wait, no. That wasn't a handball. No, it wasn't a handball at all.
No, wouldn't have given it. Okay.
No. It's a bad decision. He got it wrong. You know, I don't know what he saw. I think one of the things is with Clattenburg that I think that he was... I don't think he realised Sterling was in the box. And I think he thought he was going to give it.
And it's a free kick.
And it's a free kick. But then when he didn't realise, and then I think the Spurs players were like, he's in the box, because he gave it. He kind of whistled, but he didn't go straight away and give the penalty. No, I don't think he was sure. And then he realised, oh, damn, I've got to give him a penalty. And, you know, I just think he made an error, really. He guessed, and then he sort of, you know, and then realised, oh, no, I've got to give a penalty.
This final one, you said last week on the pod that you felt that United had an outside chance, or United's best chance of disrupting City next season was taking that Champions League spot away from them. And you hadn't ruled them out of coming in the top four, United. Does Leicester's defeat open the door to, sorry, does City's defeat open the door to United still getting that top four
spot? I think
spot?
They can still get
as we were.
I mean, United are going to keep going no matter what, are they? They know it's, you know, they know how vital it is for them as a club. Given the amount of leverage debt there is there, they know it's important for them as a club to be in the Champions League. Mm-hmm. The only upside to them not being in the Champions League is that it gives them an out to get rid of Van Gaal, doesn't it? Really, they could basically, because they got rid of Moyes for that, didn't they?
Yeah.
So if Van Gaal doesn't deliver Champions League, then they've got
a reason there.
They've
to
got
go.
A reason then yep. to get rid, haven't they? As much as Van Gaal saying all the stuff in the media about I've got a good reputation, good relationship with Ed Woodward, and I'm here for the full 3 years. He knows in his heart of hearts if he doesn't make Champions League, he's out. He's so that's the only upside for United. But the thing is, they're not going to give up, and the gap's not that big. The gap them and City is not that big. Yeah. So essentially, they could still catch City. They've still got to play City as well. City have still got some tough games. So yeah, why not? If City can't go on a run, why not? Mm. They can catch them.
Van Gaal's done such an appalling job at United. Spent so much money. Passed on so much talented players, just made the wrong decisions. I think the job that he's done is appalling. I just simply can't see him having much of a future at the club right now.
All right. I want to move on to the last game on Super Sunday. We'll do United in more depth next week. Before we do, I have to say that I've been very, very critical of Danny Rose for the last 18 months. I thought he was excellent on Sunday. Danny Rose really, really impressed me.
And what? In what way?
I thought he was impressive. I thought he was committed. I thought he won most of his challenges. I thought his delivery at times was quite good. And I've been someone that's been very critical of him. So fair's fair. I have to say, I was impressed.
I still think he could do better with his delivery, actually. I still think for the amount of ball that he had against Manchester City, you think of how many times did he find a Spurs shirt in the area or do something with the possession that he had.
No,
we don't. But I do think that he's definitely got better defensively. Mm. He's more aggressive. He concentrates more. He doesn't make stupid errors as much as he used to. Mm. But I still think his distribution is poor. And I actually think that Ben Davies is better at whipping balls across.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, the other two are much better at
the first choice two.
Yeah, they're better.
Well, they're pushing them, aren't
they? Better at delivering crosses. If the whole point of Pochettino's system is that the fullbacks are key, which is the case, then it's all about the delivery into the box, isn't it?
Mm.
And I think that both Trippier and Davies deliver better balls into the box than Rose and Walker do. And Walker again. I mean, I'm being a bit harsh, but Walker again. You look at the City goal, very good goal. You know, there's part of it where you have to say Iheanacho took it well and good run by Clichy. But should Walker have been done for pace by Clichy on the 1-2?
No, probably not. All right, I'm not sold on Rose. I just thought that the last 3 or 4 months, I thought he deserved a bit of a mention.
Definitely better, though. Yeah. Definitely he's improved.
Simeone, let's move on to the last game very briefly, the Liverpool-Villa game. Stan Collymore had a bit of a rant on TalkSport about his beloved Aston Villa, and he mentioned that he felt there were better League One sides than the current Aston Villa team. Yeah. Do you feel they're clearly gone? Do you feel Villa will struggle in the Championship next season, as the team and management currently stands?
I mean, if they continue their form, then they probably will do. I feel a bit of sympathy for Villa. I mean, they lost their two best players in Benteke and in Delph. And they have become a bit of a setting club, and they just haven't been able to replace those players. Strangely enough, they were far more competitive under Sherwood, who I think is a very vain and arrogant individual. But I mean, the change of management just really hasn't worked, and I feel like Remy Gard's almost had a bit of a culture shock. And I don't think he expected the Premier League to be like this, and he struggled with the squad, and he struggled to organise them. So I feel like actually the lack of almost of motivation in that side is problematic. But it may be a change of management next season if they were to fall into the Championship could regalvanise them.
Okay, and just last one on that game, Ollie. If Daniel Sturridge stays fit between now and May, does he go to the Euros? He goes. Yes,
absolutely.
Who misses out? Because the conundrum is, well, because Welbeck scored on Sunday, Walcott scored on Sunday, Sturridge scored on Sunday. Kane and Vardy, you would assume, are bankers. We know Rooney's a banker, so who's going to miss out?
That's a hard question, actually.
Because he can't take all five.
Well, no. Normally they take four, don't they? But
yeah.
I don't know, maybe he would take five. Maybe he will, because he could look at Welbeck and think, well, Welbeck can do a couple of jobs for him, can't he?
Yeah.
Welbeck's not, you know, Welbeck can play wide as well as playing as a... I know he doesn't like doing that, but, you know, he can do it. So maybe he will take them all. But I would assume that Sturridge would be part of his plans because he was part of the World Cup team. And Sturridge is a good player.
But when Hodgson was asked about forwards and players, he didn't mention Sturridge on the weekend. So I think that he's not actually counting him. And Sturridge, I don't think we'll even but stay Alan, fit.
Wasn't
anyway.
That interview before the game though?
It was before the game. Yeah, it was before the game.
I mean, there's a question mark about what would be best for Sturridge as well, because you have to think the amount of time he's had out injured. I know that
the last thing he needs now is a summer in.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, there's an argument to say that actually he needs to play more games and that might help him, but there's also an argument to say he should stay away from the Euros and just get a really good pre-season in him, you know, especially the way that Klopp wants to play. He really needs a pre-season, and I think that would be important for him. So the last thing he needs is to be coming back from a European Championship late, if he stays fit, as Simeon says, and then he's kind of starting the season late and, you know, and then, you know, he breaks down again. So maybe it wouldn't be a good idea for him to go, and maybe that's where Hodgson's looking at it. So, yeah, maybe I'm going back on what I'm saying now. I'm thinking, if anything, maybe Sturridge wouldn't go unless he goes on a really amazing run that makes it very difficult for him to be ignored.
Well,
this
is why I said if he stays fit, because even if he doesn't score a bag of goals, if he stays fit, has he got to just prove his fitness between now and May, or does he have to score goals?
No, he has to score.
Oh, he does. He definitely has to score goals. But then there's always going to be something in the back of Hodgson's mind, isn't there? Because, you know, we've seen it how many times. We're all veterans of tournament football, and you take these players who you know are going to break down halfway. That's a nightmare when you get players and they're just kind of, you know, you get into the first game and they've broken down, and then you can't get anyone else in, and you know what I mean, they've taken up a place in your squad. Podson's got to weigh that up in his mind. Does he take someone like Sturridge, who hasn't had many games, hasn't played many games over the last couple of years, and there's every chance that he could go to the tournament and do what Ledley King did a few years ago, you know, under Capello? You take him and then he breaks down and that's it, you know? Right. So you might want to just say, yeah, Sturridge, great to see you back playing, but actually I'm going to go with Vardy, Kane and Rooney and the guys I know they're going to play and they're going to stay fit.
All right, let's move on now. Simeon, I want to talk about the FA Cup now, because there's FA Cup weekend this weekend. And a lot of people, including myself, when the FA Cup, maybe not so much this round onwards, but in the early rounds, when the FA Cup weekend comes around, there's this kind of sigh of, it's the FA Cup weekend. Rather than when the Premier League fixtures come around, we get excited. A lot of fans seem to feel the FA Cup is a little bit of an inconvenience, and there's a bit of a resentment almost towards the FA Cup. What do you, share that kind of feeling towards the FA Cup weekend? And B, if you do, what do you feel the FA can do to reinvigorate the Cup, to make it as exciting as the Premier League?
Well, I mean, it's not the Premier League. But, I mean, I'm in two minds here. Firstly, fans enjoy going to Wembley. So when you have a cup final, I think cup
yeah,
final.
Yeah, but hang on, the early rounds, Wembley seems, years away. No one's thinking about Wembley then.
But I mean, cup final still have a sense of romance. So I don't believe that the tournament is completely tarnished. Also, I think a lot of this conversation is centered around fans who support teams who are ideally challenging for the title. So fans who support United or City or Chelsea, Arsenal, these kind of teams who are in the Champions League, perhaps they've always had this kind of position. Because if you speak to clubs or supporters of clubs who are in the lower leagues, the FA Cup still has a sense of romance to them. They still get excited when a draw happens, and they're looking for a potential big game, and they're hoping that their team is going to do a giant killing. So
am I being a snob?
I think there is a perspective amongst amongst supporters of clubs in the upper echelons that, you know, the FA Cup is not as important, but that there is still a romance for clubs who are in the lower leagues. And so I don't believe that the FA Cup is as maligned as people think it is. And actually, when the BBC coverage of the FA Cup goes out, I think it does have a sense of romance attached to it, and it does do the whole history quite well. The only thing is that, you know, if you're a team like, if you're, as an Arsenal supporter, you know, I've seen Arsenal win the FA Cup for the past two seasons now, and we haven't won the league in however long. So that's what the, you know, that's what the call is for. And the reality is that the league is always going to be a bread and butter for any club. So the league will always be a priority because that's what pays the bill.
Mm. Okay. Ollie, do you, if you're honest, in the early rounds, when you're in the momentum of the league season, the Premier League season, and FA Cup weekend comes around, I think it's the first round for Premier League teams is first week in January. Do you feel a little bit like, you want to continue that momentum of Premier League games? Or do you agree with Simeon that maybe that's just something that the top eight teams that maybe have other interests elsewhere feel, and everybody else in the country does still get excited by the FA Cup?
Well, I think that a part of that is fans have been conditioned by the clubs themselves, haven't they? The clubs themselves aren't prioritising the FA Cup, and the clubs themselves, especially the top clubs, should I say, are playing, you know, they're not playing their strongest teams, are they? And they talk down the cup about, oh, well, we've got so many games and we need to kind of focus on the league. And so we're not going to take this as seriously as we would the league game. So I think that there's some conditioning going on there by the clubs, in which they're lowering the expectations for the fans. And you look at what the attendances are like in the third round now. I mean, you remember back in the day, the FA Cup, the third round, the fourth round, they were, you know, it was packed houses. You don't get that anymore. And I think that the clubs have to look at that, because, you know, they're still expecting people to pay a certain price. I know sometimes they say, you know, for instance, at Spurs, it's £25, I think. But still, £25 is a lot, I think. Why don't, you know, if they should be looking to fill the grounds no matter what. They should be looking at turning around and saying, well, actually, why, you know, we might not play our best side here, but we're going to make it £5 and £10 to get in. You know, it's the FA Cup, let's fill the ground.
Fill it up, yeah.
You know, and they don't do that. So it doesn't look good, does it? When you're watching these games on the TV and you watch them, you know, especially when you're looking at a championship club like a Blackburn or something, and they're playing. I remember once watching a game, it's Blackburn Man City, I think, from a couple of seasons ago. The ground was half empty.
Yeah, I remember that one as well.
You know, and it was like, this game is, there's no atmosphere here at all, no atmosphere, and that kills it stone dead. So I think that it's down to the clubs and the FA, whoever is in charge here, to look at it and say, well, okay, if the modern way is to play weakened sides, don't just think you're doing us a favour by saying, "All right, we're gonna lower it to £25." It should be lowered even more than that. And not just that, but yeah, you know, because essentially we're not being given the reason as fans who support the teams from the Premier League not given a reason to take it seriously, because most clubs, even Championship clubs now, are dropping players and not playing their best team. You know, they don't take it as a priority. Their priority is to get into the Premier League.
So, Simeon, what do you feel the FA could do in terms of, if Ollie's right in that the clubs don't take it that seriously, therefore that filters down to the fans? I mean, there's been ideas that have been mooted, like, you know, seeding some of the teams, giving a Champions League spot to the winner. What else have I got down here? Not stopping replays, so just have the, just there and then, no more replays. Do you feel that some of those ideas may force the teams to take it more seriously?
I mean, you could provide a Champions League prize, but I'm not in favour of that. Perhaps it may be just inherent conservatism. Also, I find the idea slightly, I don't know, it's somewhat unbecoming. I like the idea of that it's the best teams in the country who can qualify and compete for Champions League spot, and that is the Premier League, the elite league. The idea that a team in, you know, the Championship or whatever, who could win the FA Cup, could be representing this country against Barcelona and Bayern Munich, I think is diminishing.
But that's the Premier League's problem. The FA's problem is to try and make the National Cup exciting. Do you know what I mean? Their problem is the Champions League or the Premier League.
The problem with the Champions League is that it's supposed to be Europe's finest. Therefore, if you're allowing anybody, any club side in this country to potentially be in that competition, is slightly problematic, I find. But, I mean, I'm not sure what clubs can do, because the reality is that in this day and age where money matters and therefore your position in the league counts for so much, the league will always be the priority of club, whether you're trying to avoid relegation or whether you're competing for the league. But, I mean, when it comes down to it, in the final... the final rounds of the FA Cup, going to Wembley still has a sense of magic. I mean, I went to Wembley, I think in the first of our recent FA Cup victories, and it felt good to be there. It felt like, you know, it felt almost magical, and I feel like I think that this still exists. The only thing is that the competition can be quite laborious, and the priority will always be the league for financial purposes.
I got one of my bright ideas from the FA's point of view, to try and, it might not make it more exciting, but it might solve the problem in terms of bringing through more English players, would be to make the FA Cup, every single football team in the FA Cup has to play a minimum of 5 English players.
Oh, that would just make the quality even poorer, to be honest with you. Because English players are not that great.
Well, no, but they're not that great because they don't get a chance to play. Ali, we're seeing as an example. He's as good as he is because he's been out to play.
And that's because he's good. He's playing because he's good enough to play. That's why he's playing.
Well, it's chicken and egg, isn't it? If you can't get better unless you play.
The reason why they don't play is because they're not as good.
Well, that's probably part of the reason. But surely if they're not playing because they're being... Look, a foreigner's been brought in.
Is people are watching the Champions League because they want to watch Europe's best players. If you somehow curtail that for the FA Cup, you're just going to bastardise it.
So you don't think that throughout all the Premier League teams, all the foreign players that are playing in the Premier League right now, there's not an equivalent in their position that's better than English?
Well, I don't... Well, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and we can't see them to count them. What I can say is that certainly in the squad that I support, the best players are overseas players. They're Petacek, they're Ozil, they're Sanchez, they're Giroud, and the most erratic players are British.
Fair point. All right, let's move on now to our last talking point of the pod. I want to talk about tickets and fans, and this was obviously instigated by the Liverpool walkout a couple of weeks ago, and then the subsequent club saying that they were going to not increase the tickets for the most expensive tickets for their fans to £77. And I'll start with you, Ollie. I want to ask a question. Do you feel Liverpool Football Club are in touch with their fans, or is the club caught with their hand in the till? And do you know what I mean by that second part of that question? I basically felt that they were applauded heavily for doing what they did. But then my thought process was, well, hang on a minute. Why are we applauding them for doing what they've done? Either A, somebody in the Liverpool accounts or executive can't count properly, or B, they were just being bloody greedy. Because if they can reverse that decision, they didn't need to do it in the first place.
But I'm still at a loss to understand what they've done. I'm still at a loss to understand... why Liverpool fans are hailing it as a victory. I don't get it. I don't get what have they won here? Because essentially all Liverpool have said they'll do is they will scrap the £77 top ticket that they were muting. And now they've turned around and said, we're going to get rid of all the categories, and now every game is going to be a Category A game. So now you're in a situation where only some games... I think 6 games a season, right? Only 5-6 games a season were Category A games. Now they're all Category A games. So how is that a victory? I don't understand how that's a victory.
I thought it was next year they were going to be the top tier games, £77, and now they're going to stay at £59
for a Category A game against, you know, the top sides, right? And they had their Category A, Category B, Category C, like most clubs do. Now they're saying, we're going to get rid of all the categories and we're going to make everything one category, Category A. So category A is the top price. So how is that? How is that a victory?
So Liverpool v West Brom next season
is £59. So I don't understand why that, how that's a victory. Because if I'm sitting in the main stand now, and I know that only six games I'm going to pay £59 for, but now I'm paying
for every game.
I'm paying it for every game. So is that?
I think the Liverpool fans. I'm talking a bit on their behalf now, but they see it as a victory because it hasn't gone up. I think they see it as it hasn't gone up. So hey, we've won. But what I'm wondering is that I take your point. I didn't realize that was the detail of the case. But what I was thinking was they didn't need to do it in the first place, clearly, because they've reversed it or they've changed their mind. So I didn't quite get why it was lauded as like Liverpool are great. They listened to their fans. They got what they wanted. But really, it seems like a case of they didn't need to do it in the first place. They've just done the right thing.
Absolutely. But yeah, I think this is a problem with football, really, isn't it? I mean, you were just talking about the FA Cup and how we can improve it. But essentially, it's kind of, all these things are just kind of messing around with the fact that the game is skewed already. You know what I mean? They're not really addressing the real problem. It's almost like you're saying, well, the game's not right, but we can't do anything about that. So we'll just tinker around the edges by, coming up, this is obviously in relation to the last point about the FA Cup. But the point is that you're tinkering around the edges. And again, it's tinkering around the edges, what Liverpool are doing. Essentially, the prices are too high. The prices are too high to begin with, right? So you're basically, whether it's £59 or £77 or whatever it might be, you're already fleecing fans as it is. So, like you say, there's no real credit to be taken from turning around and saying, well, actually, we won't take liberties to that extreme.
We won't take the piss.
Yeah, we'll cut back a bit. But essentially, you're still asking people to pay a lot of money, and I think it's ridiculous, to be honest with you, the amount of money they expect people to pay. But this is the problem with football. It's just everything is kind of. Everything is sort of, this is the way it is now. And, Simon was saying earlier about the Champions League. Oh, well, you want to see Europe's finest. The Champions League's never been about Europe's finest. The Champions League's been about making sure that all the top teams, all the elite clubs, get their snouts in the trough. It's not about Europe's finest. If it's about Europe's finest, then only the champions would play in the Champions League. Mm. Arsenal have been getting away with playing the Champions League for years on the back of finishing third and fourth. Mm. That's not, they're not the Europe's finest. As we'll see when you play Barcelona.
But they are. But I mean, if you really want to streamline Europe's finest to own the champions, you could do that. But the argument was that there were so much better teams in Europe. Why not expand?
No, that's not true, Simeon. The truth of it is that the only reason they expand the Champions League is to keep all the big, I can't remember what they're called, the G, whatever they are, keep them all happy so they wouldn't break away and have a Super League. Even the other day, we had Rummenigge coming out and saying that
they want to break away because
they're not making enough money. And this is the point I'm making. Whether it's the FA Cup or whether it's what you're talking about with Liverpool and the ticket prices and whatever, it's all, you're dealing with a situation here where it's almost like, well, we can't do anything about this situation, so let's just try and tinker with it without actually dealing with the real issue. The ticket prices are too high. What do? Oh, we'll just tinker with it and we'll take credit and say, oh, well, we listen to our fans but at the end of the day, the fans still pay a lot of money. Do you know what I mean? There's no change there. And the FA Cup, oh, let's have no replays. Let's have like penalties straight after the game finishes and let's do this and let's do that. But what are you actually doing about the fact that the FA Cup is not the competition it was when we were kids? Because, you've now got an expanded Champions League, which is essentially killing everything in its wake. So you can't, there's nothing you can do about that situation unless you actually deal with what's at hand, the big issue. The big issue is
tickets are too expensive.
The big issue is that big clubs are taking too much of the pie all the time, aren't they? Mm. They're taking too much in ticket prices. They're taking too much out of the fact that they're playing in the Champions League, and there's nothing left for anyone else. No. Do you know what I mean?
So, Simeon, are you a season ticket holder at Arsenal?
Yes.
Right. So, because one of the responses where I tweeted that I didn't think Liverpool should be lauded for what they did from a lot of people was, well, look at Arsenal. Arsenal don't listen to their fans. You lot pay how much money, blah, blah, blah. And it's a slightly separate point for me, because Arsenal, while we know pay the most expensive tickets, I think, in the world for football, at least Arsenal can turn around and say, well, you've got Suarez, Messi and Neymar coming to the Emirates next week. Liverpool don't have that coming there.
Yeah.
The brand of football we play is, that Arsenal would say, is of a high quality. You've got Sanchez and Ozil every week. Liverpool haven't got Sanchez and Ozil every week. So it's a slightly different rebuttal, but I'm just making the point that you pay a lot of money for your season ticket. Do you agree what the Liverpool fans did, and do you see it as a victory?
Well, I mean, there is a struggle going on between the corporatism of football and football as a community asset that means a lot to working class people in this country. And so the action being taken by fans to kind of ensure that they have greater involvement and to ensure that football is actually fair and not completely gentrified is important. So I do think that fans need to take action. But it's very tricky, isn't it? Well, firstly, I mean, on Arsenal, Arsenals are expensive, but you do actually get value for money. You get 26 games. 26 games for a bit over £1,000, including Champions League. It's actually pretty good value.
Okay,
so but I mean, the fact that the club tried to introduce a surcharge for season ticket holders for the Barcelona game simply because you were there and had a ticket in advance is nothing short of scandalous. And I think that clubs, despite getting so much more money from football, I mean from television, are trying to still extort fans is problematic, because actually, the provision provided by television and by sponsors is supposed to ensure that actually football is more accessible, actually attending games, but it hasn't done that. But the tricky thing is that now that football is a global commodity, it's not about you supporting your local team and just people in the proximity to that area support that club. Football is now globalised. You know what I'm saying? That you have people who have a strong affinity who live not only throughout the country, but throughout the world. And so when you think about that level of demand and that level of support that in an age of the internet is so potent, we're looking at a time now where certainly for the big clubs, the money men in those clubs are saying, well, look at the demand now. And if we're following a principle where tickets are set by the market, let's utilize that to enable us to compete against the club. So it's almost as if they're engaged in a race to the bottom. But something has to give somewhere along the lines, because the truth is that ordinary working class fans on working class wages just cannot afford to go and watch their clubs if their club is in, certainly in the Premier League.
So you said that your ticket, you feel like you're getting value for money.
I just want to
ask, as a fan, value for money is something it's a view on it by individual fans. I mean, do you pay to go see your team play for them to win and deliver trophies, or do you go to see your team to see a quality and a particular brand of football?
Well, here's the problem now. The problem now is that because football is so expensive and football has earned so much money, fans now approach it as if they're consumers. Now fans expect to be entertained. Fans now expect their team to win because they're earning lots of money. They need to do their job. And so actually it has changed.
Aren't those two different things though?
No.
Winning and playing good football. We play great football, but we don't win.
I don't even think we play great football anymore, to be honest with you, at the moment. But I think what I'm saying is that the amount of money in football has changed the relationship between clubs and their fans, and it's become slightly more adversarial one. Fans are upset that they have to pay loads of money. And also, there's now a disconnect between the players and the fans. Whereas before, the players were the fans. They were on the same level once upon a time, earning, you know, similar money, or the money wasn't that different. And so they could almost feel like, these are our boys playing. We can relate to these guys. They come from our communities. If they don't come from our exact community, they come from communities like it. They come from working backgrounds and so forth. Now you're having players who are earning what you are earning in a year, earning in one day. And so that in itself creates its own sense of animosity and also kind of a negative ownership. So where I sit behind me, you know, you have a woman who constantly screaming at the players, he's an effing idiot, he's an effing idiot, he's an effing idiot, he's an effing idiot. He passes out of play, he's an effing idiot. And that kind of animosity building around a stadium with 60,000 people, I don't think it's particularly positive. I'm not saying it was entirely positive in the past when you had players being racially abused and that kind of negative kind of in impact. But I do believe now that there is an expectation that if I'm paying your wages, if I'm paying you to earn such vast amounts of money, you better entertain me. And I think that vibe has completely changed the way that football is. It's almost become an entertainment, and it's kind of created a far more consumerist environment where fans no longer feel like they're part of it. Yeah. They feel like they're spectators rather than participants. And actually, for football to work, fans need to be participants, not just spectators.
Ollie, do you first of all agree with that? And an essential point there, that with the money in the game now, there is a bigger divide between the fans and the teams, and also the type of fans that go to watch football and expectations now of what they want from their footballers and their football clubs.
Yeah, but we're just talking about this country though, right?
Yeah, because
that's not the case everywhere, is it?
No.
Because we know in Spain and Germany and whatever,
they're all part of the club,
they're members, aren't they? So, you know, it's kind of, I think that's a different dynamic, isn't it? And that's why it's kind of, you know, I think that we've got the model we have here, the fans have just moved further and further away from the club. And from the club that they support, and I don't really think that that's a good development at all. But you know, the club seem to be happy with this setup, but I don't think that it's good in the long term. But they might look at it and think, well, you know, as Sibian was saying, they might look and think, we've got global brands now, and if you don't like it, then we'll get X amount of people who come in
from China or
wherever, who, you know, they're gagging for tickets, so they'll come in and take your place, but. Yeah, I think that I think it's a dangerous road to go down, because I actually think that you know, as we hear many times, the fans, you know, without the fans in the ground, it doesn't look very good, which is the problem the FA Cup's got. You know, when you suddenly realise you're playing in front of, you know, and that's what's killing the FA Cup in the end. No one, you know, people just don't turn up in the early ground. Certainly in, you know, the Championship, where people don't turn up, and if that starts happening in the Premier League, then they might have to look at it as well.
The issue is that the football clubs are becoming football companies. And this is completely changing the dynamic of football. And this is what is a part of the demise of the FA Cup. And you have to wonder now what this means, because you will have clubs which are now brands who will just completely monopolize large parts of the football supporting market. And fans are as much a part of the problem as anybody else, because fans are now supporting clubs that they have no affinity to, no connection to whatsoever, not in terms of location, just simply the fact that they identify with the players who are there at the moment. And so, you know, it is a part of wider changes in society, but it just means that it becomes far harder to fight that and to go back to the way it was, when fans were participants instead of spectators, and where they saw people who they felt were coming from where they were coming from. Yeah. It's completely changed now.
I've just got one quick question to each of you. I've just got to wrap it up now. But you've mentioned before that with the Tottenham Stadium coming in a few years' time, what will be the deciding factor? Because the prices will go up for your season ticket. What will be the deciding factor in terms of whether you decide to stick with your ticket and are prepared to pay that increase? Will it be you expect your football team to deliver trophies? This is sport. It's about winning. If you're not winning, what's the point? Or do you not mind if you're not winning trophies, but you're entertained?
I definitely want to be entertained, and I definitely want to see a better brand of football than I've seen in the past. And if Spurs are doing that, then, you know, I'll be happy to pay a little bit more. But I want to be entertained. I obviously expect them to be competitive as well. I don't expect them, for the money that's coming into that club, you know, like all of these teams now, you know, they're getting a massive payday from the television companies now coming in next season. I expect them to be competitive, but I also expect them to play good football. And if those are the two things that, you know, I expect Spurs to be doing. So, yeah, you know, if they can live up to that, then there's a...
As a fan, you're prepared to pay more money.
I'm prepared to pay a bit more money, but yeah, I don't think it's sustainable to be mediocre and be paying ridiculous prices to watch mediocrity. You know, that's just not That's not that, that can't work. No, I don't think
it doesn't even make sense either. Yeah. Just finally, Simeon. I know that Man City, for their champion, I think it's Champions League and some Premier League away games, they actually put on certain travel. So they'll put on coaches and they'll subsidize, I think, train fares for some of their away fans. They will pay for certain things that make up the difference in terms of an away day experience. Bearing in mind what you pay with Arsenal, if Arsenal said to you, right, if you want to go to the Bournemouth game or the Newcastle game, wherever, we'll supply the travel, we'll supply a certain amount of food even, just little things that cost you for a away day trip, would you still be prepared to pay the what you pay right now? Bearing in mind, you said that the tickets, the entertainment is not great at Arsenal when we play and we don't win football matches.
I mean,
or is it just a case of just bringing the bloody price down?
I mean, I was being harsh. I mean, right now we're going through a patch, but we at times do play good football. And certainly I think as football fans, we're probably, as there are hundreds of clubs in this country, professional clubs in this country, you know, we are certainly we're spoiled fans, and the Arsenal fans' attitude's really abysmal, to be honest with you, anyway. But I mean, I would go. Although I do feel like, I said, you know, I pay what.
Would that help if they said, you know? Well, I mean, it costs a lot to go to an away game.
It would be brilliant. But I mean, Arsenal don't have a problem filling out their stadium. Arsenal don't have a problem getting fans to away games. I mean, the challenge really is not for clubs like Arsenal. The demand is a global one. They are chilling, and they're chilling all the way to the bank, and they're laughing. The challenge is for clubs at the bottom of the league or in the Championship or in the League One and League Two. The challenge now is what happens to these clubs now, especially when younger people today are supporting clubs based on the way that they identify with the brand of that club, based on the players that they have and what they're winning and so forth. I remember once upon a time, you never saw no Man City shirts in London. What's a Man City shirt doing in London? Now you see Man City shirts all the time. Chelsea fans. I mean, when I was in primary school, Chelsea, what's a Chelsea kit? Now Chelsea kits all over the place because they dominate for a period. And so, I mean, that kind of, and even if you go to other parts of the country, I mean, it's bizarre how many people in London support clubs that they have no kind of connections to. And this is a lot of people are formulating their support now, which means that it's how these clubs now build up their fan bases to enable them to compete and to create atmosphere. There's challenges for them, but for Arsenal, I mean, they don't have to worry about this thing right now.
Okay.
And I don't think that they will provide anything for us because they know that there is a huge waiting list for,
yeah,
for tickets to the Arsenal. For a long time, I couldn't get tickets for love no money.
All right. Excellent pod, guys. Thank you very much for your contributions this week. That wraps up this week's pod. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, FFP_11, and subscribe for free via the iTunes library. Until next week, peace.